You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
And privacy have been a hot topic for the last decade, as internet outlets collected our data and sold it off to companies. COVID-19 now presents new concerns around privacy and data as governments are launching apps to have more effective contact tracing. For many, there are concerns around this privacy and concerns for what happens if it's misused. Karaitiana Tayuru recently wrote a report on the importance of data privacy for Indigenous communities and shared his concerns around what that data could mean if it's used by police, used to police rather than to protect. He started off by telling me more details about what this ethical framework is and how the method he used is developed.
So I've created some guidelines that primarily for the New Zealand government or contractors for the New Zealand government. I explain issues such as that there's not just one Māori opinion, there's various opinions. Express the need to have a treaty clause in contracts, basically saying you need to work with Māori to prevent these biases from occurring. You know, I've used three kaupapa Māori frameworks which can be quickly adapted to data and artificial intelligence and other new technologies. And then from doing that, I filled the gap, and so I created a new data ethical model that fills in the gaps based on 10 primary cultural values that should be associated with data. So it depends on the new technology system which framework is applied, but I would suggest that probably all the different frameworks could be and should be used for most systems as a basis. Some systems would require, you know, slightly different considerations. So for example, an artificial intelligence system based on genomics is going to be quite different than a database of recordings of the Māori language. The basic principles are the same, but it all needs some modification.
So something you've said in this report is Māori data contains Wairua Māori and is tapu, and therefore Māori data is tonga. Māori data is a property and a commodity, and therefore all the principles of te triti are applicable. Could you speak to this in terms of somewhat referring to data in the same way we refer to bodily fluids and DNA, how te ao Māori applies to that?
So in te ao Māori, customary beliefs are that anything, say an image or writing about or anything that you touch, you leave part of your spiritual aspect, which we call a Māori, stays on that or inside that thing. So there's no difference between genetic or biological data and digital data. It still has part of the person or the species Māori inside it. So it's only a Western perspective that the data is totally anonymised. So hence the reason one of the frameworks was Sue Mason Jury's Tapawha framework that addresses the spiritual aspect and safety of Māori and Māori data. At a marae, you'll see people talking to carvings, and they might give the carving a hongi. That's because there's a Māori or a spiritual connection to that carving. You'll notice in some Māori households, there's pictures of the dead people that are in a room where you don't eat or drink. Again, that's because there's a Māori associated with that image. Data is exactly the same. It's got the Māori in it. And it needs to be treated with respect. And as I say, it is a tonga because of the aspect that it has a Māori in it. And we also know that data is the new world's commodity. It's worth more than oil, or it was worth more than oil before the international lockdown. And companies trade in people's data all the time.
Margaret Mutu has called data collection intrusive and believes a better approach would be to engage with Maori leaders who are in touch with their whānau in their communities in order to conduct contact tracing. What are your thoughts on this approach?
Yes, I think it's definitely a good idea for many Maori who live in their communities. It removes the whole risk of trust issues. It removes the biases, potential privacy issues. It removes all of those issues. And yeah, in my opinion, you've got a better chance of contacting Maori like that. But I think for Maori who don't associate with their whānau or back with their marae in their communities, you know, those Maori who live in the cities, then the tracing app is probably better designed for them because they are disconnected.
Mm. So for you, this really is, in terms of this ethical framework you have in place, it's about ensuring a level of trust between government and Maori.
Yes, it's about trust and it's about respecting the government's obligations under the Treaty of Waitangi or Te Tiriti. It's an opportunity for Maori not to be recolonised again in the digital world. My fear is if we don't have these data guidelines and have these discussions, we could quite easily end up being colonised and disadvantaged much more than biases in the current system already are.
I think you brought up a couple of things there which I'm interested in touching on. COVID-19 has presented for many people a feeling of having their kind of self-determination stripped. Sovereignty and self-determination are kind of crucial aspects of Te Tiriti. In government's COVID-19 response, do you think it has crossed a line in some way? And also, can data collection compromise that self-determination?
Sure. So, I haven't been involved with the data collection in person, but from what I've read and from what my networks are telling me, Maori have been ignored with data collection. I've seen data being produced that hasn't categorised Maori or where Maori are. So I think, I also know for a fact that the consultation with iwi and Māori haven't occurred with the data collection or the swabs. So, I definitely see that as a self-determination issue. I think the way that this could have been solved was if the Ministry worked more proactively with iwi and more proactively with the iwi testing. I know there has been some iwi testing, but I certainly think it could have been a lot more proactive, and if we'd have done that, we'd have had a lot more Māori being tested, and there wouldn't be the self-determination issues that we have now.
Informed consent also plays a crucial role in being able to feel secure in using any kind of service, really. And we've certainly seen this abused in digital spaces with hundreds of pages of terms and conditions when we're using a social media outlet, for instance. How do you want to see informed consent accessible?
So I think some of the key issues are for Maori cultural values to be intertwined into informed consent. So I know at the moment that a kaumātua goes to a testing station, gets a swab, they're not told what happens to their DNA information, what happens to the results. There's no informed consent. So as a start, I think people need to know, well, Māori need to know, well, is it, will your DNA or your data be respected in a culturally appropriate manner? Will it be made private, or will we sell it on to other people? Will we make money from you? Other aspects is who actually owns the data. Internationally, it's been a common issue with researchers to speak to one person of an Indigenous village and seek their cooperation for information and data, then claim the data from the whole village and claim they had permission when they didn't. So that's another informed consent issue. Need to respect the other cultural rights, as you know, where the data came from and how it's going to be used throughout its entire life of the data. If you just look at social media, for example, I mean, as you said, there's hundreds of pages of terms and conditions and what can and can't be done. I think it needs to be made more easier to read and more accessible for everybody.
Something you also brought up with this is your concerns about police potentially having access to data collected through an app. Could you explain that to us?
Sure. So, the government hasn't made clear what the app will do yet or what will happen to that data. So, just purely speculating, just playing the devil's advocate, we're not certain that people can be tracked by other government agencies, such as the police, to find out where people are and what they're doing or who they're associating with. And that goes back to being a privacy concern and a disclosure concern.
And just before, you mentioned digital colonization. I think some people might be confused about colonization in a digital space. So could you flesh that out a little bit more for us?
Sure. So basically, it's taking information and digitizing it without full disclosure, without full permission, without understanding the ownership of that information or that data. Other classic examples would be storing that data in the cloud. So if that data is stored in a cloud by a company that's owned by an American head company, or stored in America, then that data becomes, it falls under the American laws instead of New Zealand privacy laws. So we can lose rights and access to our own information that way. Inherited bias, like the example I used with the AI engineers and researchers, that's another form of colonization that could happen with our data, just without the human input into how that data became that data. The biases and the future impacts in the real world, would be huge. Ownership is another issue. I mean, if you physically take land or take physical property, you can see it. You can see it's actually gone. But with data, if it's gone and been sold, then it's very hard to actually say it was gone and where it was gone and how it was gone, etc. Policy-making decisions by governments, by health insurance companies, education facilities, all rely on data. Again, without any logic behind how that data was gathered, could certainly create a whole number of discrimination and various other issues.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.